He keeps himself in trim by bending bars of iron. This bar is the genuine article which we tested before he began to play with it.
All right, guys, thanks for supporting the show. I got a list of sponsors here. So first off, we got Harito Bending, harito-bending.com. You're going to use promo code CHEERS for 10% off. And a portion of that sale is going to come back to support the show. So I appreciate that. You know, everybody wants to be on the Harito cert list. I haven't heard a bad thing about the quality of his bolts. I can personally say that they're the same every time. Some really hard bolts on there. He got certs for every style, including snapping. He's also got wraps and t-shirts on there. So definitely hit up HaritoBending.com and use the promo code CHEERS. Next, we got Jed Johnson's Nail Bending eBook. If you want to check this ebook out, if you're a beginner, message me for the link, because if you use this link, a portion of that sale is going to come back to support the show. We also have the Gripito Trainer. This is an all-in-one grip training tool. If you use promo code Beyond the Bend, you're going to save 15% off of a sale of $90 or more. We also have Gil, former guest, BarrelStrengthSystems.com. Use promo code BEYOND for 10% off. Gil's got a ton of cool stuff on there, including the flask. This is a pinch device. If you can do a body weight pull-up on this thing, you're going to get on a roster. I think that's pretty cool. All right. Lastly, we have Hard Life Fightwear. That's hardlifefightwear.com or .co.uk. If you want some rash guards or something like that for jiu-jitsu, they also got a bunch of other cool t-shirts on there. You're going to use promo code Beyond the Bend for 15% off. Also, if you want to get on a roster, an unofficial roster, hit up at Eat Chalk Get Big on Instagram. If you bent a 80D unbraced or two 60Ds taped together unbraced, you're going to get on an unofficial roster. The other thing is, if you snapped a horseshoe, I don't need a video. I'm keeping track of people who've snapped horseshoes just because it's a cool thing to do. If you've also snapped one into three pieces, hit me up. Or if you've snapped one laying down, there's only two people on that list, so get on it. Last thing, a couple new things coming up. I'm going to be putting out a feat of the week. This isn't really a challenge more than just like something cool to do week by week. It's going to be just like some athletic stuff mixed with some bending and snapping. So I'm going to be putting that out. And the only way to participate is just to do it and then tag me in the post and throw it up on Instagram or Facebook. The other thing is every month, I'm going to be doing a monthly challenge. We've had some really good participation lately. I want to keep that going. I have some really cool things planned. So I really appreciate everybody's support and looking forward to another good year. All right. Thanks.
Beyond the bend, beyond the bend.
All right, Tanner, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
All right, before I start it, how I always start it, which is tell me about the first time you saw someone bend a piece of steel. I want to talk about something that I think is pretty cool. Major credit to you is I've had a bunch of strong guys on this show, some of the strongest of the strong. And later in the show, I'll ask you who's the strongest person you know. And when I ask guys like Clay Edgen and Adam Glass, and Don Cummings, Gil Goodman, all these guys, when I said, who's the strongest guy you know, your name is always in the mix. So that's pretty cool. And it's just like, what do you think about that?
Yeah, that's kind of crazy to hear from big names such as those folks. I mean, especially Clay, you know, double my size, Gills, obviously, you know, very well renowned, all those guys, very accomplished. So, you know, it's cool that they thought of me as one of the strongest people they know, at least maybe in this tiny community of, you know, grip nerds, so to say, steel bending nerds.
Yep. So anyway, yeah. So tell me about the first time you saw someone bend this piece of steel.
Yeah, when you said that, I'm like, I'm trying to think of when the first time was. I'm trying to think of the first grip competition that I went to and if someone was bending steel there. I remember, it's kind of funny, I don't even think Adam knows this, but I saw card tearing at some point. Let's see. And I think Adam was bending a red nail on that video also. But okay, let me think, because I know, let's see, the first competition I went to was with Jed. So maybe I'll rewind here just a second. So I started doing grip strength and then kind of a little bit of steel bending because I blew out my knee real bad and tried to find another way to strengthen my hand. So I found the grip board. So I probably found something from the grip board about it. I got to say the first person I saw must have been, yeah, it must have been a video linked from the grip board of Adam Glass. There was like a room full of people and he was bending or rather tearing like a mini deck of cards. And then he reversed a red nail in that video too, if I remember right. It's either reversed or whatever it was. And I had no idea what the red nail even was. So I looked it up and saw that there was a whole series of bars you could buy. And that wasn't the first thing I started doing. I think the first thing was like grippers and that, but it stayed in my mind. I gotta say that was probably the first time. If I can remember another one, I'll tell you, but that was probably it.
Nice. So what's your athletic background? I know you have a climbing background, which seems to come up a lot. It seems like everybody I interview is either like coming from climbing, powerlifting to some degree, or some type of grappling thing. And some guys have all three, which is pretty wild. So what was your athletic background growing up?
Yeah, so, I mean, a lot of people play traditional sports in high school or middle school, whatnot. And I tried quite a few things. I mean, I tried, you know, just team basketball when I was young, you know, baseball, things that everyone plays, but I was never really any good at it. And so one day, like my parents had me in like a church, kind of like a church group, like, you know, for like the middle school, high school kids. And so one weekend we all went on like a men's retreat, you know, like boys retreat or whatever, to the climbing gym. And I'd never done that before. And I was doing a wall that had like some overhang and like some steps you had to climb through. And I got to the top and, you know, came down, did it again. And this guy comes up to me. He says, "Hey, you ever done this before?" I said, "No." He goes, "Well, you're really good." He goes, "Take this pamphlet, give it to your parents. And, you know, see if maybe you could be on our climbing team." And I thought, all right, climbing team, like, whatever. So I gave him the pamphlet. I imagine in their mind, they're like, well, he's been terrible at everything else. So apparently he's half decent at this. So let's give it a shot. So I went, you know, and joined the climbing team. And that must have been 2003 or four, something like that. So I'm about to be 29. So you know, do the math. But so I climbed all through late middle school or early high school and through high school. And through all that, I mean, I went to multiple nationals. The best I did was I got second at the bouldering national championship or youth national championship. That was a lot of fun. And I mean, I had off-campus PE for that. So it was fully encompassed, really. Like, I mean, that was my social life. That was everything. It's like, you know, people that are really into like gymnastics, for example. Like I remember I had a right. couple buddies that did gymnastics and it seemed like they were always training. Like they trained 6 days a week. If I ever wanted to see them, it was like, no, they're at the gym. Right. So that was kind of the way it was for us. You know, we had practice a couple times a week, but if it was the weekend, I would be, even on my off time, you know, I would be up at the gym training. So that's most of what I did athletically. I mean, it's all body weight training, front levers, one arms, things like that. Just hanging off edges, what you see, you know, climbers training. Not a lot of weights until maybe I kind of got out of climbing briefly in college and just started doing a little bit of lifting, but I mean, like nothing serious. I would just go and train like a bodybuilder. And the only thing I even did that was maybe even kind of impressive, which I thought it was at the time, I was able to bench like 315 after maybe like 8 months of training, which was pretty good for me at the time. That was maybe 2011. And then after that, I said, okay, I'm getting too heavy. I want to get back into climbing. So I never really pursued weight training that hard. That was probably the level that I really pursued it. Never deadlifts and squats, just, you know, bro split kind of a thing. And then really, I mean, I guess I got back into climbing, tore my knee, like I mentioned, and found hand grippers. It's kind of a funny story, but the way I found hand grippers too. So after tearing my, it was my LCL, I had no way to train. And so in like maybe 2006 or seven, my parents had bought me like a gripper just in my stocking. And so I'd had this gripper lying around and I was like, oh yeah, I remember my parents got me a gripper. Maybe I can like squeeze those. Maybe that'll keep my hand strength while I recover, you know. I tore my LCL. This was probably 2014, 15, something like that.
And how'd you damage your knee? Was that climbing?
I was doing, a heel hook. If you ever seen that climbing technique, you kind of use that heel and you twist your knee really hard. And it puts a lot of pressure on the outside of your knee to kind of keep your hips in close. And I was putting all this pressure on it. It had this big pop. And everyone actually thought that I punched the wall. It was so loud. Everyone in the gym thought that I'd punched the wall. I came off and my friend's a PT and she grabbed my knee and kind of moved it side to side. And she's like, oh yeah, I feel like there's like some lax in your joint there. She's like, you tore it. So. Very painful.
Familiar with a move called the heel hook and grappling. Yeah, very familiar.
Yeah.
And very familiar with knees exploding. But I didn't know there was a climbing technique called a heel hook. That's funny.
Yeah. So I grabbed this gripper that I'd had and laying in a drawer for years. And you know, my parents thought, oh, Tanner's pretty strong. We'll get him a hard gripper. They got me a number four. So I had this number four laying around and I'm just like just bouncing off of this thing, like, okay, this, you know, I'm not gonna be training with this. This story isn't gonna lead into, and then I just fucking grinded the handles together and felt like a monster. So I bought another set of like, you know, a two and a half, three, and I was able to close the 2.5 on my first try. And that was, or rather, I was able to close the 2.5 the first day. Like I tried it, you know, that morning when I got it and it was like, I couldn't quite figure it out. I was setting it way back here. And then, you know, I messed around with it around the afternoon. And by the end of the day, I'd figured out the technique and I was able to close it. But so that's kind of how I found the grippers. And then it kind of goes on from there. And I found the grip board and found out there's competitions. And apparently I was halfway decent at it. So.
I'd say. So you got Iron Mind grippers right from your family?
Yeah. My mom, I don't know how my mom or dad actually found out about it. Like I said, this was in the mid 2000s. So I don't really know where they, maybe it must've been actually a little bit later than that, but I don't know where they would have thought to get them. They must've just looked online and found them. Cause that's, I don't funny. Remember giving them a link. I mean, it was a little while ago. I could have very well said, hey, buy me this one, but I don't think I did because it wasn't on my mind at all.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, when you were setting that 2.5, did you look up how to do it or were you just kind of like figuring out what works for you?
No, I just grabbed it and I was grabbing the spring at the top and I kind of tried to finagle the spring and, you know, I wasn't really looking up how to do them. After I closed the 2.5, I realized there's probably something to this stuff. So I looked up gripper training programs and I found a couple of Jed's, well, first his setting videos. And then I found, first I found the Kenny based training. Do you know about that on the grip board?
So I just kind of have been made aware of what this is from some comments I just saw recently. And pretty crazy stuff.
Yeah, Joe Kenny, that dude that fake gripper closes. I don't care what anyone says. Everyone knows that knows anything about grip is that's fake, completely fake. So yeah. There's a program on the grip board about using his training methods. I got super injured doing this, and I made quick progress though. I made progress on that to being able to close the 3, and then get like my MM0 for the grip board, and then I found Jed's program, which was cadence based training. And I made quite a bit of progress with that too. So those are kind of the two things that first got me going in grip, doing the gripper training, you know, maybe a little bit of Rolling Thunder, but yeah, those are kind of the things that I looked at first.
Yeah. And then from the grippers, where did then steel bending fit into your training?
It was right around that time when I just saw on people's, the grip board profiles that they would be certified on all these bars, like Bastard, Red Nail, this and that. And I remembered seeing Adam being the Red Nail in that video. And I just, it's funny because it's a little bit of a sidetrack, but a lot of people do grip or do steel bending and they never commingle the two, or old time strongman feats. They never try the other thing. They just sort of pigeonhole themselves and this is what I do. Yeah. Immediately right out of the gate, I bought everything and I tried everything. I would go up to Elliott Hardware and I would buy, you know, all the bolts I could find, all the different bars I could find. So, I mean, right around the time I was trying grippers, I was also trying steel bending. I was taking no time off, like, at all. It's like, if I woke up one day and, you know, my skin was too sore from closing grippers, I'd try to bend a bar. My forearms were sore, kind of pulling back on my flexors from doing Rolling Thunder too much, you know, I might try steel bending that day. So, the steel bending came in really right along everything else because I saw the certifications and I thought that would be cool. You know, MM0 was the first one I thought about doing. And it's funny to look at that video. I guess that must have been 3.5-4 years ago or something like that. And I'm like minus maybe 50 pounds from where I am now. It's just like, it's just funny seeing myself set this little gripper and being like, oh, wow. So, I started all that and thought about doing the red nail cert shortly after. And that was something that I thought was pretty, at the time I didn't really know anything about it. I just saw that a lot of strong guys that I knew were on this red nail roster. So I thought, okay, well, I want to be able to do that. I just remember being so immensely frustrated about the technique because I would wrap up a bar and, and, you know, a 60 painting or something like that. And I'd grab it here, melt it. And I was like, cool. You know, I'd put a grade 5 in there, melt it. I'd put a grade 8 in there and then, you know, bouncing off of it. I could get it up under my chin and it feels so much worse. It's just like, this is obviously the wrong way to do it. I'm like, the right way to do it is right in front of myself. So this is so much better. Yeah. It's like, why are all y'all getting all choked up in your neck? I was like, that's not, like, where's your strength going to come from? You know, it didn't make any sense to me, but I knew that I was wrong because all these guys are bending hard steel that way.
Right.
It's like, I'd sit in my living room and look in the mirror and like, just tuck it so much trying to get, you know, into the position. And finally one day, I remember I had a grade 8 wrapped up and my dad's sitting in the chair and I was like, all right, watch. I was like, you see this bolt? I was like, I'm going to bend it. I'm going to bend it today. I get up and finally figure it out. And he was just so impressed. He just couldn't believe that he could do that kind of thing, you know? That's kind of where I started with the steel bending. Shortly after that, I decided to try to start on it. So on the red nail, that is.
Yeah. And so how long from like the first piece of steel you bent to certing the red nail, what was that length of time?
Man, I don't think it was very long. You know, I tell this story, but this is a short time frame. This is like maybe I'm trying bending 60 pennies up through grade 5s, you know, that kind of stuff. Yep. Maybe 2 or 3 weeks, maybe 3 weeks. And then up to like a grade 8, maybe like a couple weeks later, it was like each week I was feeling noticeably better in my technique. I mean, I'm obviously not getting that much stronger. It's just mentally my like CNF. Is just able to shove my body into this terrible position, you know?
Yeah.
And really, once I did the grade 8 that I had, the red nail came shortly after. I mean, that's pretty similar, you know, in the range. So I think I was able to bend the red nail maybe my like fourth or fifth try, something like that. But it took a little bit from that to then bringing it down to iron mine pads.
Yeah.
And I just hated that so much. Just trying to bend in iron mine pads. It's so terrible. It's just like, I feel like there's sometimes this, you know, I mean, I like iron mine and what they're doing for the sport, but I feel like sometimes there's a little bit of a struggle with, changes in equipment from Rolling Thunder first gen to third gen. And then, you know, we got these bars and everyone that bends is bending in leathers or, you know, or some sort of either suede or something like that. Yep. And it's like, no, you're going to take these little imps and, you know, wrap them.
Exactly.
And it's just like, this hurts. Like, I hate this. So
yeah,
I'm not sure the time frame. I could probably look at my Instagram and see, because it's probably, you can probably see kind of how it worked, but maybe a couple months, few months. Yeah. Something like that.
Wow.
That's cool. I showed up to this guy's like apartment. I brought my dad and my brother with me, and it was like in downtown Dallas. And his like,
no way.
It was just so odd because I mean, I don't even know who this guy is. He very well could be watching this.
Yeah.
But he had like a little rubber mat just like in the corner of his room with like his like road bike and like a Rolling Thunder, some kettlebells. But it was, you know, like, I mean, like a modest like studio, you know, and had some marble countertop on his kitchen. I just rolled up a red nail rattle in his kitchen, and my dad and my brother are just standing there. You know, my dad's like 6'9", 6'10". My brother's 6'8". And so we knock on this guy's door. He opens the door, and like, you could tell he was scared because he was like, what are y'all doing? And I was like, I'm here to like bend that piece of steel that you have in your kitchen. Just showed up and like had like a horribly embarrassing shirt. Like I like go to bend it, like punch myself in the jaw.
Oh God.
And,
yeah.
And like, I mean, I'd been training, like I was really like killing them pretty good. You know, I was expecting to just have the two ends touching, you know, crushing all the way down. And I mean, I did it no problem, but it wasn't super clean.
Nice. So once you hit that cert, what was the next thing? Did you go on to try to start cutting red nails down or anything, or go on to anything else, or did you just go fully into the other grip stuff?
Yeah, you know, I wish I would have done more bending, because that was also at a time when I kind of had no injuries, really. Like, no elbow pain, no shoulder pain. Really, I mean, nothing. I guess I kind of left this part out, but what got me started in all of this was arm wrestling. Because, after I'd done all the gripper stuff and I kind of found out about things, I'd been in contact with Michael Hain. And so I've been going out to arm wrestling practice where they had an inch dumbbell, and I've been lifting that. And Michael started telling me about some bending too. So I was approaching all these things. And like I said, I got interested in the certs. So I did the red nail. And after that, I just started tackling more things, I guess. I just didn't really focus on anything else. I knew that there were other certs, like, you know, all the FBBC certs. But at that time, I'd seen FBBC and Iron Mind. And Iron Mind, in my mind, had a little bit higher stage. And so I was like, okay, it's either this or, you know, now there's like the gold nail, and I'm not going to try to bend the gold nail, you know, it's just like, I'm not at that level. Yeah. And I'm sure you've experienced this too. Maybe other people you've talked to, but whenever you're bending frequently and really pursuing that, it's really tough to pursue grip at the same time. And I mean, if I'm pushing myself on bending, and then the same session, I want to try to, you know, do thick bar, or even the next day do thick bar or grippers. It's like, I'll be okay. And if it's just a conditioning training block, maybe that's a good thing, you know. But if I'm peaking for a contest, or I'm trying to find my max, which at the time I'm so new, I'm like, you know, trying to get my one rep max higher and higher. And I'm noticing that the more I'm bending, the more I'm being held back. So. Yeah. I didn't really pursue much more bending after that. And I kind of wish I would have, especially just being around, you know, Robert, Eric, Tommy, Adam, and just they've all done such crazy hard bending. I mean, it'd be cool to be a part of the conversation there. It's just something that you hit a point, and I feel like it kind of occurs a few steps after the red nail, when it's so much pain and so much rest you have to take before you do it. And I just was naturally better at grip. I mean, I came in 2017 and won grip nationals. Granted, that was based off of the scoring system because of, you know, based on weight. So, I mean, I didn't actually win, but what is the scoring system called? You know what I'm talking about? It's like, usually we do reverse strongman. Is it the allometric? What's it called?
You know, I really don't know too much about scoring and that stuff, to be honest. Starting to like get interested.
The Wilt is kind of, or whatever, but whatever the way they did it. I'd won based off of my weight. And, you know, and I was setting all of these like PRs and looking at other people's numbers and grip and realizing that I was as good, if not better, than a lot of these people, and thinking, okay, I need to push this. Like, this is what I'm good at. The steel bending stuff, the red nail roster, I'm scrolling through how many people have done it. And it's just like, it's almost the kind of thing now, and not to talk down to anyone that's pursuing it, but it seems like the red nail is something people get to kind of quickly. And so that for me was a goal, but then I'd never really set any other goals outside of that because I didn't think that I was a natural at it enough to be like, I'm going to be, you know, the next insert name here, you know? So, trying to think if there's something I left out there as far as bending, but I kind of left out the arm wrestling piece, but
That's all right. Well, I know people, do you know, Jan Heller, Harito? You've probably seen online, right?
Yeah.
So Harito is a sponsor of the show and he has a cert list, right? A regular double overhand cert list, but then he's added all these style certs, including double underhand, reverse, snapping, one pad, no pads, you name it. It's awesome. And I just want to make sure everybody hears that Cheers will save you 10% on your order for bolts. So next time I get some bolts, maybe I'll send some down to you because I'd like to see you maybe reverse one of these things or something. And get you on that list. That'd be cool.
That would be fun. I could totally see myself, I mean, easily jumping back into this. I mean, if for no other reason, then there's no grip competitions really, aside from this thing we have coming up on February 27th here in Dallas or in the Texas area. But for the most part, you know, I mean, all of the big competitions are shut down. So it's a perfect time to pursue something like that. Occasionally, but, you know, occasionally I'll do some bending. Like, like I said, the Team Texas will train on Sundays and people's schedules are kind of a little different now, but we still try to get together pretty often. And, you know, sometimes someone will wrap something up and hand it to me. So I was actually able to reverse a red.
I saw it.
It was in doubles. I'm not sure. Robert wrapped it. I have no idea what he wrapped it with. For all I know, he could have put a big plate of steel on both ends and then wrapped it around that so I could just melt it and look like a freak. But it was in double leathers, if I remember right.
Yeah. So when I had Adam on the first time, which was back in like August, maybe early September, he was actually talking about your training and he said you were doing a bunch of like timber tie snapping. All unbraced. You want to talk about that? Because I love snapping. I'm a much better snapper than I am bender. I think maybe because I have good conditioning from grappling. And it winds up being a lot of conditioning, being able to just push through it. But I find that I'm able to do a good amount of snapping at a relatively high level and then still pursue. Like I just recently got a 3x4 Saxon and made a 2-inch axle and stuff like that. So I feel like
very cool.
If I'm snapping one day, I can do grip the next couple days. Whereas when I was bending hard, like it was like the double overhand was like tweaking something in my shoulder. So I'm on like a permanent no double overhand for now. Right. Like I'm doing, which I'm developing some, a much better double underhand, which is way more comfortable than reverse. I must just have some weak wrists in the reverse position, man, because it's trash compared to my other bends.
I actually have really weak wrists too. I mean, compared to other things, they're not strong.
So right now, the active steel shredder put on by David Horn is a sequence of all unbraced snaps out here at like chest level, right?
Okay.
And actually one bar that you actually have to snap and then snap the two pieces, which has been kind of fun. But I just wanted to talk to you about that unbraced snapping that Adam said you were up to. What did you think that did for your grip and stuff?
Yeah, we started doing that over, let's see, it was last summer. I'd never even tried to snap anything before. I just see Instagram videos of people doing it a lot. I see Circo doing tons of snapping. See a lot of people that do the David Horn steel shredder, just you know, miscellaneous things here and there of snapping. And I just always thought it seemed absurd and never tried it for any other reason than it's such a cardio workout. I would see people, you know, laying on their back with their legs all taped up, covered in sweat. And I'm like, I just can't imagine this is going to make my Rolling Thunder, my axle better. But eventually, you know, over the summer, we all just messed around. We were sitting by the pool and this is definitely an idea after, you know, a few drinks deep, and I was like, I'm gonna try to bend a timber tie barehanded. Like, I grabbed the timber tie, and I was just like, finally, I'll just put a hole in my hand. I was like, all right, that's a bad idea. So I wrapped it up, and I was like, you know, I'm gonna try to snap it. I'd never tried snapping before, so I snapped that one, and it was not too bad, you know. And so we kept doing some more of that. It seemed like we were doing some snapping after grip practice about once a week.
Yeah.
I still have a scar on the side of my finger from it getting so hot. Like, I got a big blister, and it's still there. But yeah, I don't think it's anything that I really pursued much past 60 pennies. Just because I guess I can't figure out the technique. I mean, I would wrap them really tight. Like for example, if I tried to snap a grade 5 or something like that, I'd wrap it real tight and I'd bend it. And then when I go to bend it back, the pad loosens so much that then I'm just like left with all these loose straps and loose wraps rather. And I don't know. I guess I never really pushed it too far as far as what I think it did for my grip. Maybe detracted a little bit.
Really?
I'm not, I mean, so I'm a specialist. I'm probably kind of a bad person to ask about training because like for example, the competition is released. It's going to be King Kong. It's got the grab ball, little bighorn, 2.25 crusher and the flask. I won't do anything else in my training. None other than those four events. Like, I won't be doing axe, I won't be doing Saxton, I won't be doing anything. I'll structure all my training around those events. I don't even train them with both hands. I'll pick like two events that are strong. I'll test all the events with both hands and figure out which hand is strongest. And I'll realize that my little bighorn is strongest with this hand. Okay, great. My flask is stronger with this hand. Okay, great. So I literally never train flask with my right hand, and I never train little bighorn with my left hand, so that way I can capitalize on all my training sessions. I'm not getting fatigued with a hand that's not even going to be good on the flask. It's going to be a complete waste of time. So that's the way I kind of do my training. So I'm very, very specific about it. I train almost just for contest, and I think that's why I end up doing well on these, is because I take it a little bit more seriously in that sense than maybe a lot of people. So with bending, It felt something to me like if I was a football player doing two-a-days, and then you told me, hey, you're doing great with these two-a-day practices this weekend. I know you're a strong guy. You've got a powerlifting meet. You're going to have to go max out. It's like, right. I'm going to be terrible. And but kind of going back to what I said about conditioning with steel bending with a full grip block, it could fit in with something like that. But I find myself so often just being a specialist trying to get a stronger one rep max with one thing, that if I add anything to that, it's going to detract from my training. So if King Kong is what I'm trying to go for, and I'm starting to think more about pushing my squat and my bench press, those, my caloric demands are going to be higher. I'm going to be putting out more energy towards my bench and squat, and now all of a sudden I'm a little bit too tired to hit that little big one session that I meant to do for the day. So that's what a lot of people talk about me, and they go, oh, well, you know, Tanner, he's not a very big guy. He's not this, not that. It's crazy. He's done all these, you know, all these things in grip and done well. And it's like, well, that's quite literally because I don't put any time into anything else. I only do this.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And something you said there, I want to get into a little bit. You said you might be good right-handed on the flask, but a little bighorn on the left hand. Is that something unique to you, or are there other guys that are like somewhat ambidextrous like that? Because I can't even imagine that.
I would say it's almost universal with guys that are kind of towards maybe like the top 5-10%.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, if you give them maybe broaden out, give them like a 6 or 7 event contest, and it's a right-handed guy, his right hand is not going to be the strongest on all those events. There's going to be one of those events that for whatever reason is left better. And there's really no reason for that. Like, so for example, I'm right-handed. I write with my right hand, everything about me, and you know, I kick a ball with my right leg. I'm fully right side dominant.
Yeah.
When I was training rock climbing, like really, really hard, this is probably towards the end of my climbing, 2010, about when I, maybe 2009 is when I was the strongest. I could do 10 one-arm pull-ups with my left arm, and I could do 6 with my right, and even though I'm right-handed. And that's not to say, it's not like I pushed my training to force it that way. I was training everything the same. So I get into grip and I start training Rolling Thunder and realize my left hand was like 20 pounds stronger than my right. And, you know, talking with a lot of guys in grip, you see that's often the case, maybe not quite as dramatic, but guys always have a stronger side. You know, it's not just Adam's kind of example. He often is pretty even. But even when we were training leading up to King Kong, by the time competition day came around, he had, for the 4-event contest, he had 2 events that he was stronger left arm and 2 events that he was stronger with right arm. And so you go into the competition planning that way, knowing that, you know, you have 60 seconds to make a successful attempt. I'm not just going to be trashing myself if it's a flask. I'm not going to be trashing myself with both hands, failing, knowing there's no chance my right hand can do it. I suck pinching right-handed. I'm only going to be able to do this left. So there's a lot of sports specificity going into that. So that's kind of where I kind of know a lot about training is just doing a specific thing like that. You know, I may not be very good at building a full program, but with that type of stuff, I seem to have been taking it seriously and it's been paying off for competitions at least.
Wow. That's mind blowing. I did not know that. I figured everybody was just pulling with their dominant hand, period. I can't even.
Nope.
Like, no. I got a David Horn top downstairs. I'm about to go grab that thing with my left hand and see what happens.
Yeah, you might rip it off the ground.
Yeah. So you mentioned the guy that you were training with doing a little arm wrestling had an inch dumbbell. And I know that's something that you train a lot of, or a bit, maybe just like post a lot of because you just manhandle the thing. What was that like? And did you pick it up the first time you ever came across it, or what was training like with that?
Yeah, so Michael Hain is an arm wrestler. He went to my high school, and I knew that he was a big arm wrestler and really, really strong. He was around my weight, you know, he's maybe 150, 160. I guess at the time I was 170. And I got my knee all bust up. I was, you know, learning about all the grip things. And I messaged him and said, hey, are y'all still arm wrestling? I'm really interested in getting into this. And he sent me the details. He said, yeah, I'll come pick you up this Saturday. We'll go out to practice. I said, okay. And he picked me up and he said, oh, by the way, you know, the guy's name's Adam Ergang. He's got a, you know, arm wrestling kind of club that meets every Saturday. And he goes, they have an inch dumbbell out there, so you'll get to try that. And I said, that sounds familiar. I was like, I think I've heard about that. I was like, it's like a really heavy dumbbell, right? He goes, yeah, it's 172 pounds, you know, 2 3/8 inch diameter. You know, old famous strongman Thomas Entrepick pick it up, yada, yada. So I was like, okay, I knew it was hard. I thought it was like a heavy grip thing to do or whatever. So we show up and, you know, we're warming up arm wrestling this, and there's a rubber mat with the inch dumbbell sitting there. It's a kind of a, you know, real big handle. It looks very intimidating and cool, you know, badass, like big circus bell. So I walked over there and I picked it up and I took a few steps forward and I'm standing over the concrete with it. And Adam Ergang, he looks over and he goes, whoa. He goes, hey, he goes, put that back on the mat, put that back. You know, he's worried I'm about to, like, it's about to, you know, fall out of my hand and crack his concrete. So I was like, oh, okay. So I walked back and set it back down. He goes, did you just pick that up? I said, yeah. He goes, with 2 hands? I said, no, I reached out and just picked it up with 1 hand. He goes, can you do it with both hands? I said, yeah. So I reached out and just kind of picked it up, and everyone there was freaking out. And it's just kind of a funny story because I legitimately, like, this isn't false humility or anything. I really thought that everyone there could do it. I thought that it was like the fun training bell that, like, you know, if you're a strong guy, you come in and pick this thing up. But of course, you know, these are all hulked out monsters, you know. Yeah. I assumed that they could all do it. Yeah. And apparently, so Adam Ergang could lift it thumbless, and he was the only one there that could lift it. He couldn't lift it grabbing it straight on. And I was just shocked. I was like, oh, like, so it's just kind of funny. And then after arm wrestling practice, I went over and tried to lift it, and Michael will still quote me as saying this. I was frustrated because my arms were all blown up from training. I said, man, I can't even lift the inch right now. And then he just kind of throws his arms up and he's like, what? He's like, can't even lift the inch. He's like, who says that? And I was like, oh, I'm sorry. It's just like, it was really easy for me earlier. It's weird that it's hard now, you know?
Yeah. So,
that was just kind of funny. That was the first time that I'd seen one. It's funny because that was actually Adam Glass's old dumbbell that he'd had for God knows how long. And he'd sold it at one point and Adam Erging acquired it. So Adam Glass's old inch dumbbell was the first one that I actually lifted. So.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's kind of interesting. You probably would have lifted it either way, but I feel like with this stuff, like the fact that you went into it thinking everyone in the room could lift it. Like there's definitely, I was talking to somebody recently about just like, once you know something is possible, like in a month or the next month after that, interview the dude, Stan, the guy, the first dude to ever snap a gold nail, right? Mm-hmm. And we were talking, my friend Dave and I were talking about like, imagine just setting out to do that, like not knowing that anyone else had done it yet, you know? It's just like
absurd.
But then once it's done, it's like now it's doable, you know? And we, over this last year, I don't know if you've seen any of it, but like we've seen snapping a red nail be somewhat of a big deal, right? Like kind of few people had done it, and maybe on average it took like 10 minutes or something, and then like a few guys did it and got it down to the 5 minute area or whatever. Now everybody that's home, and the boom of snapping and bending and stuff like that. My friend Dan Dring in England snapped one of these things in like 32 seconds, like, and I've done it under a minute.
Completely unbelievable to me. I don't think I've ever even snapped a 60 penny in under a minute.
And it's just like I just think it's interesting with strength and this type of stuff. It's like the belief that other people can do it just like makes you rise to that level. And also the concrete knowledge that you've seen other people do it. Like, okay, this person's done it in this time. Like, and you just drive yourself to do it like that. That was kind of a cool story. And it made me think of that. And I'm sure that's happened before.
Yeah. And climbing, I mean, people get first ascents and then they'll rate it. Let's say they rate it something hard, like a V10. And then they super hard or whatever. And then all of a sudden, now that maybe it's a climb people have been trying for a long time. Finally, this guy does it, speed 10. Then you have all of a sudden 10 other guys come and do it. And now everyone goes, hey, that thing might be more like V8, maybe V9. It might not even be V10. It's like all of a sudden, once it's unlocked, it's a mental barrier for some people. That could be for why I was able to do it, just not knowing. But it's also a fun fact is that dumbbell is 172 pounds. And when I did it, I was like 170. So I'm on a short list of guys that, you know, were weighed less than the inch when they lifted it. So that's pretty cool.
Nice.
That list will expand, I'm sure, soon, but you know.
it's definitely one of my goals. I was talking to Adam. I was like, before I invest in one of these things, what are some like barriers you'd say to maybe conquer before I actually drop, you know, $500 or whatever it is on an inch. Yeah. Like, and he's like, oh, do this on your Rolling Thunder, do this on like a single hand fat grip.
I'm curious, deadlift. Did he say like at least 200 on the Rolling Thunder?
Yes. Yep. And then it was like 185 with a fat grip, single arm deadlift, something like that.
Yeah, that sounds reasonable.
Yeah. So after you lifted that inch, then you did a little bit of bending, then inserted the red nail, phased out of bending. Now, when did really the hardcore grip training, like when did that really take off and what did that look like? Did you all right away sign up for a competition and get specific on the training?
So I saw that Big J's FitCon. I don't know. Do you know Big J from Big J's Extreme Fitness?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. So he was, I mean, he still is big online, but in 2012, 13, you know, when YouTube fitness, everyone had these fitness channels, there were all these collabs, and Big J would hold this FitCon every year. And it was a lot of fun stuff. There was car deadlifts, there was expos, and it was pretty fun. And Jed Johnson came out for a grip competition. And I knew that Morgan Choi was going to be there. He's like a, you know, MMA a really, really strong grip guy, probably the second, third strongest grippers like in the world right now. And so he was going to be at the FitCon to do Jed Johnson's grip competition. And so I was messaging Jed, and that was the first real competition I did. And it was very low ski. It was minimal equipment, just like, you know, pinch 225, hold it as long as you can. And I, you know, a couple other things. And I beat Morgan on it. And I thought that was crazy because Morgan was the strongest person I'd ever heard of. And beat him. So I thought that was huge. I got to meet Jed and, you know, Big J there. And, you know, Big J is good friends with Ronnie Coleman. So Ronnie Coleman shows up at the end. And it was a fun first experience. Then after that, I did a competition in Arizona. If you're, I'm sure you know Aaron Corcoran. He does the Cactus Grip Shootout. It's like his competition for that he usually does every year around like March or so. And there were some really strong guys there too. Phil Kashaba, another really big, there's a big arm wrestler. I can't remember his name now. Martin was there. Martin Braun, Aaron, few other guys. Anyway, there's, you know, pretty classic event. We had Euro grippers and everything, and I did well there. Aaron beat me, but he didn't beat me by just a ton either, which I thought was cool, because Aaron was, I mean, he is one of the greatest benders, you know, and super, super strong. I mean, really strong Euro, and he makes these super cool trophies. Let me grab this.
Cool.
Well, I don't know where his other one was, but anyway, this is the one from the first competition. That's 2017.
Oh, no way. Hell yeah, that's awesome.
He made this. I mean, people that are just listening won't be able to see it, but this is just like a solid block of aluminum that, you know, he puts on he's got like a lathe, CNC machine, all this stuff, and he like crafted that whole thing. It's really, really sick. And anyways,
that's awesome.
We've gone twice now, or Adam's gone, I guess, once. I've been twice. His other trophy he made is this big, with Martin helped make it, this big cactus. It was like bent with a rebar, you know, it's like, it's got a patina on there. Maybe you saw a picture on Instagram, but it's amazing. So I had a great time at that competition. And then I guess shortly after that was 2017 Nationals, which I mentioned, you know, I did well there. So it kind of started going full on after that. After those two competitions with decent success, I realized, you know, especially being lightweight, I could really start putting up like records that I didn't think would be beaten for a long time, especially in lightweight categories. Fast forward a few years and I start piling on all this weight. So now I'm no longer a 83 kilo lifter, but you know.
Yep. So at what time did you get to training with Team Texas and that cast of characters?
I'm trying to figure out how that even came to be. I should know this, but so in that same year, probably 2017, I'd been hearing about Adam. I've seen stuff about him online. You know, whenever I like dive into something, I, you know, head first online, looking up everything there possibly is to know about it. I'm a bad hobby hopper. I have so many hobbies where I buy all the equipment from, you know, coffee roasting to, you know, grip sport, all types of things, you know. And I'll buy all the equipment. So I knew about all these guys in grip. I knew about Adam. And I knew that he was under 90 kilos. And especially at the time, you know, a lot of the records I'd seen. And I thought, okay, I think he's local. I don't think he lives in Minnesota anymore. And I'm like, if he's in the area, I'm like, I wonder if he wants to start training. And so there was, if you know Joe Musselwhite, he's got, you know, a huge gripper collection. He's a big collector. Yep. He lives in North Texas, but he doesn't ever come out and train with us. But anyway, he put on this grip competition, and I looked at all the events and I'm like, that'd be kind of fun. And then I wasn't really sure if I wanted to do it. This is a little bit ago. This is 2017. I don't remember why I didn't end up doing it, but I remember kicking myself because Adam did the competition and he won. And then I'm thinking, oh, that would have been cool. Like compete against him. Like, Like, I wonder how that would turn out, because I'd seen all the V-bar and mostly V-bar and Rolling Thunder. At the time, he was getting back into training grip, doing stuff at the gym by his house, and, you know, hanging off bars with a V-bar with a Rolling Thunder and lifting really, really heavy weight that, you know, was around the kind of the same as what I thought I was able to do. So I messaged him and I said, hey, I'm having trouble with like my V-bar technique. Like, it's not quite, you know, what I'm thinking it is. I feel like I could be a lot stronger. And he was nice. He, you know, messaged me back, said, hey, try this, try that. And then Tommy Jennings, I'd known through arm wrestling practice. So he kind of linked up both of us and said, hey, we should start training. Like, and I thought that was awesome. I'd been looking for guys to train with. At this point, it'd just been me in my garage just suffering. You know, I just couldn't, I was figuring things out, but you know, it's more fun when you have a community. When it's just you by yourself, you know, still have a great time. And, you know, Instagram is becoming a great community as well. But
sure,
we all started training, and it was me, Tommy, Adam, Eric, and Robert was coming out there too. And we were training every Sunday. I mean, just so much fun. We had just this routine where we would just train at the gym, and then we would go back to Adam's place, and he'd already have food going. He'd be, you know, either smoking some, you know, smoking a brisket, or he'd be making, he'd make a bunch of food. And we'd just sit out on the front porch, and I'd always bring my cooler. You know, we'd have some drinks, have some food, and then usually from there we'd start doing miscellaneous things, because Adam's got a blob farm in his backyard. He's got like 20 blobs, you know, and multiple anvils too. So start doing the anvil lifting. That's kind of when all the old time strongman feats would start. I mean, we did that consistently. We still train, but like I said, everyone's schedule is a little bit different, so we don't get to meet up and do that every Sunday like we were. It was very consistent, which was pretty fun, something to look forward to for the end of the week.
Yeah, and I'm sure your progression probably took right off when you were around those guys.
Oh yeah, and you know you have goals, and you know what other people can do, and an upcoming competition, and you know, I guess it, as far as competition goes, you know, me and Adam were pretty close, and so I would know exactly what his training numbers are. He knows exactly what my training numbers are. And then coming to competition day, it was just fun to see how that would all play out. So
definitely
having a training partner that's at or near your level is really helpful to push your training.
Yep, definitely. I've experienced the same in grappling, and I'm sure it's like that in most athletic endeavors.
Oh, for sure.
So you said you get super laser focused when you have something to train for. Let's talk a little bit about the time between impending competitions. Like, what are you doing? Obviously, you have a tremendous amount of general strength built up from years of climbing, but what are you doing between competitions to just maintain that or to develop that further?
I knew you were going to ask me this, and I feel like kind of like a jackass for like my answer, but I don't really train a lot. Like, I don't have a structured program where I'm doing, you know, big three for grip would be Saxon or Euro pinch, grippers, and axle deadlifts. I'm not just hitting those consistently. I kind of do what I want during the week, which I usually will train maybe once, but that'll just be working up to one rep maxes on thick bar. And then whatever miscellaneous thing I see people posting on the grip board, whether it's, you know, more recent Joe Hodgson pursuing one-handed tips tester. And then I think, oh, I should do that. Or you know, you see how these things work. People start trying one kind of dumb feat, and you go, oh, you know, max reps with the inch dumbbell in a minute. Okay, what does that look like? So it's more like me just pissing around. Do I think that's the right thing to do? No. But is that what ends up happening? Yeah. So I'll do one thing during the week like that. And then it's usually kind of gearing up for me to have more of a strong session on the weekend when I go train with Adam. And then we'll do pretty much everything, with a focus being around maybe like Armlifting USA events. Or if they have an online challenge, we'll be trying that. But as far as what my actual like a training to get better, this is something that I need to work on, because I've hit a point now where I think I'm right at my genetic limit for, I mean, training, climbing for so many years of my life, I've already developed almost what my top end grip strength would be for certain kind of open handed positions. Like if you're looking at a crimp and climbing, or like an open crimp where you're hanging like this, and then you look at a thick bar event when you just put your thumb there, it's kind of that same open handed position, which I was already really strong at, but you see my pinch is really bad because this narrow pinch like this, you don't really ever do in climbing. So I'm really bad at a lot of things like that. And I could be better, but I don't really have a structured plan to train things like that. So I don't know. I'm sure that there's times when I get a little bit more consistent, but I pretty much keep my thick bar strong and I just train for upcoming contests. I guess my answer is usually I have a contest coming up close enough that I don't ever fall into just a maintenance program. I'm usually doing timed holds with the events for the contest, or one rep max is in a couple doubles. It's not a lot of volume training. For me, it's a lot of near max effort, which you'll see if you talk to Adam too. I mean, like, it's a lot of, you just see on his Instagram, like working up to really heavy singles with this action bar, working up to really heavy singles with the axle. And it seems to respond. I mean, if you look at my numbers from when I first started grip to where I am now, I'm certainly better, but I think that my progress has definitely been impeded by the fact that I don't really like train that much.
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, it's going to be crazy when you finally start doing that.
Like I said, I feel like that's a really I feel like that's a really terrible answer. And like, I don't want that to sound like conceited, but like, I really don't. Recently I've decided that my full body strength is unacceptable for my body weight now that I'm near like 215, 220. So I've started running like 5.31. So I'm actually starting to lift now. And nice. And I am noticing my grip strength is lower than it's been because my energy expenditure is, you know, I'm having to kind of spread myself thin. I don't know. To an extent, I kind of wonder what it would look like if I did structured training blocks and really, but just with grip strength, you know, we're not talking Barney barbell stuff, what that would look like versus me just doing my own. Adam would call it like biofeedback. Where like, let's say you wake up in the morning and you squeeze on your baseline dynamometer as hard as you possibly can. And that morning you're registering a lot higher than you normally do. You know that for that session, that's not going to be a volume session for you. You know, you're never going to miss an opportunity to hit a PR. You're going to go down and really, really hammer it that day. And that's kind of, I guess, the structure of training that I do is I really go by feel, and I train with the same principles that I used in rock climbing, which is a lot of isometric, just static hang.
Yeah. So
that's probably why you don't see me with just a ton of size. It's because I'm just training near that upper threshold so often. And I'm noticing now after about three and a half, four years that's needing to change a little bit.
Yeah.
For my progress to continue. You know, I've been plateaued now for a little while, especially on thick bar.
Some of the strongest people ever that I've talked to talk about isometrics. So it's no surprise to hear you say it.
Yeah, well, and what it does is, I mean, just taking your all your muscle fibers and just getting your recruitment level so much higher. So, I mean, if I was bigger, I would just have more muscle units to be able to recruit. But I've been training myself for so long to be able to just recruit absolutely everything and just fire myself so hard in this one position. Like when you watch videos of me doing grip, I mean, you know, people think it's funny, and I mean, I can laugh at myself for it, but before I'll set up for like a one-handed like rolling thunder lift, for example, I'm just like taking a breath in, and I'm just pausing and just trying to like feel like my neurons, like I'm trying to feel like my, you know, like there's ants crawling behind my eyeballs or something. Like I want to feel like my whole body's on fire before I'm just like one, two, three, just boom, just as snappy as I can possibly be. Like I've always been very explosive. So training isometrics like that, I think I've actually reached my absolute potential with the amount of muscle that I have. And the only way that I could do better is to just get more muscle units, and then I can start training isometrics again. That's what, you know, so
yeah,
these problems, it's funny you ask me that question now, because it's all kind of been in my mind, noticing how I'm not really getting just a ton better in the last 6 months, and thinking, okay, yeah. I think that with the isometric training, just capitalizing on just my CNS, just revved up, I don't think I'm going to be getting just a ton better if I don't really start on my training.
Well, your training partner is the freaking plan master. When I spoke to Adam last, he's saying he's got these plans that are 3 years in the making. And I'm like, this dude's like some type of monk or something. I don't think anyone I know is like that patient in the sense of like setting goals. I know Adam's watching this,
but I don't think that's true. Adam does not have it planned out like that. I know he's going to listen to this, but I mean, we still mess around. And I mean, there's, you know, I think that Adam has goals that are 3 years out, but I don't know if there's an exact plan of I'm going to be doing absolutely this all the way till then. He's certainly got it all planned out, but I don't know about that. Adam, you don't have to tell me about that. If you've got plans for 3 years, your old training system, I don't know about that.
All right. Well, we're going to start wrapping up. I do this thing called the medley. It's a rapid fire series of questions. Generally about bending, but we'll add a few grip ones in there since I have you. So, first thing, favorite thing to bend. This is material.
Favorite material to bend? Wrench.
Nice. Hardest thing to bend for you. This is also material.
Probably that crazy zinc or aluminum bar that Adam has that's impossible. That's the hardest thing I've ever tried.
Nice. Strongest bending style?
Double overhand.
Weakest style?
Probably reverse or double underhand. Maybe let's say reverse.
All right. How about strongest grip event?
One-handed thick bar.
And weakest event?
Euro or two-handed narrow pinch.
Oh, you know what? Actually, this is my friend Dave, Caveman Dave Man on Instagram, said he's training for the Denny Stones and he's having a heck of a time with something that narrow. And he wondered if you had any advice for super narrow grip stuff.
This is going to come back to my specificity. I would take that exact handle and load it up. Find where your isometric one rep max is at. Take about 60%, 65% of that number, and then do timed holds with it in the position that you're going to be opened up. So not closed all the way, because when you finally lift them, you're going to be open. You're probably not going to be locked. And if you are, if you're using a hook grip or whatever it is, find that position where you're at and then load it up, hold it for about 8 to 12 seconds, put it down. 8 to 12 seconds, put it down. 8 to 12 seconds, put it down. Do about three to five, and then run that for about 3 sets. And I would do that every Monday and Friday, or Monday and Thursday. That's the pro. If you ask me about program, that's the one thing I've done that added 20 pounds to my 2.5-inch crusher from King Kong in between years. So that's the program, and that's about it. And that's just building. It's not going to build any muscle. It's just going to build up that isometric, just raw contractile, just tensile strength. And it has to be in the exact position. If you were doing that on a barbell or if you were doing that on any other event, it wouldn't be helpful for you. You'd have to do it in that exact position so that it's a learned, like a muscle memory, neuromuscularly, your body understands that that's what you're doing.
Yeah, gotcha. That's okay, thanks. Nice. All right, back to the questions. Something outside of strength training, bending, grip that you enjoy doing. You said you're a man of many hobbies. So what's something outside this world?
Yeah, it's like restart the podcast for another hour. I really like listening to music. I collect got a fairly substantial vinyl record collection, coffee roasting. Cool. Music. Coffee roasting, I'm pretty into. Coffee roasting has been taking a little bit of a backseat. Those two things for sure.
That's cool. You tracking down old records or like current stuff?
I like I mean, I have both. Like, I mean, on off days from work, I'll go up to this. We have a really cool record store called Josie Records. It's enormous. And they've got listening stations. So I'll go to like the new wave, you know, like 80s section. Or and I'll just pick through just like a whole bunch. It's just cheesy, cheesy stuff, you know. And then things I've never even heard of. I'll go to that section. I'll go to the kind of older, like 90s, 2000s, like drum and bass section. And then I'll pick through all this stuff and I'll have a stack of like 20 records and I'll go to the listening station and I have no idea what these artists are. I know nothing about them. I'll either go by the album cover or I'll just pick something. It's very random. Sometimes I might have heard of the artist. Yeah. And I'll set on the listening station and I'll kind of hop through the tracks and flip it, hop through the tracks. And if I like it, I'll put it in one pile. If I don't like it, I put it in the pile to reshelf. And so I've just got a whole myriad of things from Square Pusher, you know, kind of things like that, all the way through like horrible death metal and deathcore, grindcore, things like that. I definitely like a lot of different music, but
cool.
And old
stuff. Me too, man. And I spent, you know, I grew up in punk and hardcore and all that. So I know about grindcore and death metal and all that craziness. What was it? Oh yeah, I do a similar thing. So I just like say, I go on these like down the rabbit hole on like Spotify where I'll just like choose, you know, like recently it was like Jesus and Mary Chain, start with them and look at all the related artists. Like, oh, this one looks cool. Then go to the related artist to that one. And you just go down these holes and eventually you find something you've never heard of. And I found some album that had all these cool cover songs on it. And it's like, boom, this paid off. You know, it's like, maybe I'll just make like a mix of all these songs that I haven't heard before. So I definitely feel you there. And the listening station is, I'm a little older than you. I'm 35, but I just remember going to the store to like buy CDs and check, you know, like being able to listen to it in the aisle was so cool. You know, like back when we used to actually buy music. I'm too lazy or something. I never got into collecting vinyl or anything like that. I'm just like a fully streamed person.
I just like the full experience. You know, you got the, especially the older stuff, newer stuff is they don't do it quite as well, but you know, fold open and you get all the pictures, almost, you know, a story sometimes, you know, read through, inserts, posters and everything.
It's a better way.
Like, you know, having some like original Sabbath, it's like,
looking
at that and having like an original pressing and thinking, okay, the first time that someone heard Paranoid or whatever, like, you know, it was probably on this exact, you know, this pressing. Some kind of like the nostalgia and, you know, I'm a little bit of a pack rat and I'll just kind of keep things around and I don't know. Something about that is fun to me, I guess.
Yeah. And I was saying to my friend recently on this topic, like we feel like we were the last generation to really like have to hustle for music and stuff. Like you'd get something and you'd cherish it so much because you didn't have instant access to so much stuff. And I remember like having punk CDs and opening it up and reading the thanks, like, oh, they thank this band, like I wonder what they're like, and then looking through the pictures and like seeing someone in the band wearing a shirt and be like, oh, I wonder what that band is, you know, and like kind of keeping mental notes, like, so next time I went to the city to like Tower Records or something, I'd like track down these CDs and get them and stuff. It was just like just cool, you know, like I totally feel you on the music love, no doubt. It always comes up on this Strength podcast for whatever reason. All right. What's the one bend that got away? What's something you tried to bend and couldn't do it? Still haven't.
I don't even know what it would be. Most recently, it's this rusty red nail in my garage that I just wrapped up and thought that I would reverse, and I bounced off it like 5 times and set it to the side. So I was like, oh, that's terrible. I think if it was too hard, I just put it down. I'm not strong as hell, y'all. You know, pushing myself to that point. If it was that hard, it's sitting in a bin somewhere. I don't know.
Yeah. And how about what's the one lift that's gotten away in the grip world stuff?
That got away would have to be. It's only got away because it's not here. But the Millennium dumbbell. So I've lifted my inch dumbbell, my 200-pound Myers bell, Adam's 200-pound, like his 200-pound inch style, and then his green bell, which is over 200 pounds. And I can't think of a lift that got away, so to say, but it would either, so it'd be what I want to do would be the Millennium dumbbell. The one that got away, just to properly answer the question, would be at the Arnold 2019.
Adam just lost power down there in this crazy Texas weather. We got him back on the phone. No video, unfortunately. He's sitting in the dark, but he's going to finish up this episode with me. So we were leaving off on the lift that got away. So what was the one lift that got away, Tanner?
The one that got away would probably be at the 2019 Arnold's. The Rolling Thunder event, it came down to me, Eric Russein, and Carl Myerskov. I believe it was 254 on the Rolling Thunder, and Eric pulled it a little bit off the ground. Carl pulled it maybe like 4 or 5 inches off the ground, and I pulled it just to lock out, and then it slipped out of my hand before I got the down command. So if I could go back, that would have been cool to say that I beat those two guys in a thick bar event, especially, you know, Carl these days. He's such a monster. So that would have been a cool one to say that I did, because I'm sure I'll never beat him again.
For sure. All right. Here's the question. Who's the strongest person you know? And as I said, you've been people's answer to this more than once.
The strongest person I know right now have to be probably Carl Myerskov. I just can't think of anyone in the U.S. that's beating him in a, you know, full event grip contest. He's a freak. He's definitely up there.
Nice.
And Adam with his pinching and his wrist strength is certainly got to be one of the, I mean, with his 45 strict curl, he might be the strongest in the world. I don't think there's anyone else. Like I might bet good money that there's no one else in the world that can do that like he can. We've seen people like Levon, Khaled try it. No one can do it like that. So that's pretty incredible.
Yeah. Every time I handle a 45-pound plate, it just makes my mind explode thinking like he's
It doesn't make sense. It like really doesn't make sense. Like I grab a 35 and it's like I'm swinging the heck out of it to even get a halfway decent curl, you know? And Adam can curl a 45. It's like it's mind-blowing.
All right, best piece of advice you were ever given. This could be about strength in general or just life stuff.
I would say it's probably what I'm thinking most recently. The weather doesn't suck, your boss doesn't suck, your job doesn't suck, your attitude sucks. So whether that's me getting, you know, the strength and energy and mental fortitude to go to the gym or get up and go to work, it's trying to have a good attitude. So
good stuff. All right, last question to close it out is, what's the funniest person what is the funniest reaction a person has had when they find out you spend your time bending nails, or I guess in your case lifting bodyweight dumbbells off the floor, something?
Some of the nurses at work asked me what my dick looks like. They said, is it just like a Ken doll down there? That's got to be the funniest one. Sorry for the PG-13 answer, but, you know, that's what it is.
We'll let it slide. All right, in closing, who's someone you'd like to see me have on the show?
You've done such a good job at like already going through everyone. I mean, Tommy and Eric, that'd be cool. Those are some guys. It'd be fun to hear kind of what they have to say for sure.
Definitely. Yeah. I want to keep working on that. All right. Tips and advice for beginners, whether it's grip or bending.
Tips I have for beginners. I would say, pick something that makes you excited, whether it's lifting the inch dumbbell, bending a particular bar, or doing well at a certain competition with a selected, you know, few events, and just pursue that one or two things. People spread themselves so thin. I mean, I did this in the beginning, but just having a couple things to pursue and get really good at, especially if it's something that will transfer over to other things like a, you know, double overhand axle, a Saxon bar, a Rolling Thunder, and just pushing that, and everything else will come up. I mean, once you make progress there, then you can start trying another thing, but that kind of comes into my own opinions about specificities. But just not to spread yourself too thin in the beginning. Just work towards a goal, and then, you know, once you achieve that, set a new goal. I think that's a good way to make progress.
Nice. And last question, where can people find you on social media?
They can find me on Instagram at Tanner Merkel. It's TannerMerkle. I have a YouTube channel, but I don't really post anything there. There's a couple of videos of me climbing. That's just my name, also Tanner Merkel. But for most of the grip stuff and anything bending will be on Instagram.
Great. All right. That's it, panel. Thank you so much, man. You have anything else to say in closing?
No. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, it was a blast.
Sweet. I appreciate it. And maybe, you know, down the line, I'll have a few members of Team Texas on one show. That would be pretty cool.
Yeah, it was great talking to you, Cody.
Thanks, man. I'll be in touch. Have a good rest of the night. Stay safe down there. Damn.
All right. Yeah, it's pitch black right now. I got to figure out what we're going to do about dinner.
All right. All right. Have a good night, Tanner.
I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.